Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are strapping in for a journey into maybe the most challenging but also the most crucial terrain of all,
which is
the pursuit of inner stillness. We're diving deep into sources covering the really influential work, The Quiet Mind, by John E. Coleman.
Yeah, and it's so relevant. I mean, we live in a world that's just obsessed with external optimization, right? We track our sleep, optimize our software, manage these crazy schedules.
Everything outside.
Exactly. But we rarely address the source of probably, 90% of our stress.
Which is?
That endless, noisy internal broadcast going on in our heads all the time.
And that's precisely what Coleman tackles head on. The big question guiding this deep dive is, I think, incredibly relevant for, well, for the analytical, maybe data-driven person listening.
How do you do it?
Yeah. How can someone who relies on intellect, on strategy, find genuine lasting peace when there's just constant mental chaos inside?
The tyranny of the noisy mind, as you called it. We're all wrestling with it.
We really are. And Coleman, he gives us this, like, practical, almost verifiable roadmap to escape it.
So our mission here is to synthesize his methods. And they're fascinating because they bridge ancient spiritual practices with, modern neuroscience.
Showing you how you can actually tame that internal chatter.
But what really gives his work weight, I think, is this extraordinary duality we found in his background. It's quite something.
Yeah, let's start with Coleman himself, because this is where the story gets, well, really fascinating. The material we looked at presents these two almost contradictory pictures of the author.
It does. So perspective number one paints him as this ultimate pragmatic man of the world.
Okay.
Like a former British intelligence officer who then served as a CIA agent for over two decades.
Wow. Okay.
Stationed mostly in Southeast Asia. High stakes, high stress environments.
Right. So think about that training. His whole career was built on external strategy, intense observation, professional control under, extreme stress.
He wasn't exactly predisposed to faith or abstract philosophy, you'd imagine.
Not at all. His credibility from this angle comes from his skepticism. He needed verifiable experiential results. It's almost like comical, isn't it?
How so?
Well, the guy who spent 20 years trying to control geopolitical events ends up, sitting completely still for 10 days trying to control precisely nothing inside himself.
Yeah, that's a good point. But then there's this other narrative. The other material positions him as a serious academic, a scientific expert.
Right, the other side of the coin.
He's described as a clinical psychologist, meditation teacher, researcher in consciousness studies, with a PhD in psychology from Stanford, no less.
So that shifts the credibility completely, doesn't it? Suddenly, his authority comes from bridging rigorous science. He worked with neuroscientists on meditation's effects.
Right.
With this really profound personal experiential understanding.
It's kind of the perfect fusion. You've got the skeptical spy who needed results and the scientist who needed the data.
Exactly.
And that dual identity, that's the common thread. Coleman's life basically demonstrates that this path to a quiet mind, it's accessible.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you approach it as a rational skeptic demanding effectiveness or, a scientist needing proof.
He's like the perfect guide to show us that mental training isn't some woo-woo thing. It's a universal demonstrable skill.
So if we pull together his work, regardless of which hat he's wearing, spy or scientist, the book's central argument is really powerful and actually quite simple.
Okay, what is it?
True peace, real liberation from suffering. It's found through direct experiential observation.
Observation of what?
Of the mind and the body. Yeah. Directly. It's not found through just intellectual analysis or, getting more stuff externally.
And the root problem he identifies is this constant mental turbulence. He says we're basically stuck in this relentless loop like a subconscious habit.
A habit of?
Craving pleasant sensations and then fiercely reacting with aversion to unpleasant ones.
Ah, the push and pull.
Exactly. This constant emotional reactivity, this mental churning, it just stops us from experiencing life fully as it is.
Right. And to dismantle that reactivity, he details two core solutions. They're complementary, really. First, tied more to his personal journey, is the path of Vipassana.
Okay.
Which he treats almost like a science. It's non-sectarian, a method to purify the mind at its absolute deepest level by observing reality exactly as it is. No filters.
And the key discipline there?
Is developing equanimity. Mm. That means profound balance, a non-reactive mind. That's the goal.
Okay, and the second solution, more from the psychologist angle.
Yeah, that's more about cultivating this deeply aware, present-centered consciousness. How do you do that? By systematically learning to observe your mind's patterns, its habits, without getting sucked into them.
So watching the thoughts without being the thought.
Precisely. The ultimate goal is a consciousness that's, like, awake and responsive, but it isn't constantly being disturbed or knocked off balance by all the noise inside.
Okay, let's trace that journey then. Coleman's transition from, you know, high-level espionage to deep introspection. It's quite a shift.
It really is. He talks about realizing that despite all his worldly success, all the achievements, he was left with this profound inner emptiness, a void. And that's what led him, this seasoned operative, to India. And specifically to a pretty grueling 10-day silent Vipassana retreat.
10 days of silence. Wow.
In the initial phase, the first few days, it's all about confronting the sheer chaos of the untrained mind. The task is something called Anapana. Just focusing solely on the natural breath, right at the entrance of the nostrils. That's it. Simple, but not easy.
So how did Mr. Analytical Agent handle that intense focus? Must have been tough.
Oh, he describes his mind as a mad monkey. Totally rebellious against the silence, the stillness.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It powerfully illustrates what he calls the default state of the mind, just jumping wildly.
Yeah.
Memory, plan, anxiety, fantasy, back and forth.
He realized he'd mastered observing things out there, but...
But he was completely enslaved by his internal world. Totally out of control inside. This phase is crucial just to establish baseline. Wow, my mind is fundamentally chaotic.
Okay, so the real surgery, as you called it, begins on day four.
Right. That's when Vipassana is introduced. The focus shifts. You move from just the breath to systematically scanning the entire body.
How did that work?
You just observe all sensations, heat, cold, tingling, pressure, pain, itchiness, whatever arises. But the key is without reacting.
Without reacting. That sounds incredibly difficult.
It is. The key instruction here is equanimity. See, Coleman argues our misery stems from this unconscious habit. We automatically add craving to pleasant sensations. I want more of this. And aversion to painful ones. Get this away from me.
Right. That constant wanting and not wanting.
Exactly. So by simply observing every sensation as transient, it's just changing energy, you break that chain reaction of suffering. This non-reaction, that's the actual mechanism of liberation he describes.
Now, it's easy maybe to dismiss a spy's spiritual journey as just, you know, anecdotal, but this is where his scientific background kicks in, right? He provides the neurological backup.
He does. He makes this useful distinction between the content of consciousness, you know, your thoughts, worries, emotions, like clouds floating by.
Okay.
And consciousness itself, which is like the stable observing sky behind the clouds. It's always there.
And neuroscience actually supports this distinction.
Yeah, it really corroborates it. Studies show that the brain's default mode network, the DMN, people might have heard of it.
The part that worries and ruminates.
Exactly. The part that worries about the future, regrets the past, replays conversations, that actually quiets down significantly during this kind of present moment awareness practice.
And when that part quiets down,
the prefrontal cortex, responsible for emotional regulation, planning, high-level decision-making, gets stronger, more active. You literally reshape your brain.
So, okay, this is definitely attention training. It's not just philosophy. But I have to ask about one of his famous paradoxes, this idea of effortless effort.
Ah, yes.
It sounds like a contradiction, like something designed to frustrate a rational person. How does he score that circle?
That's a brilliant point. He stresses you need consistent practice. That's the effort part. Like physical exercise, you have to show up.
Okay, makes sense.
But the paradox is in the effortless part. You commit fully to the practice, but you don't strive to control the outcome. You're not trying to force the mind to be quiet.
Because that would just create more noise.
Exactly. You just create more tension. So you surrender the need for immediate results. You let go of achieving some state, and you simply commit to observing whatever is happening right now.
Okay. And that commitment, that practice, it leads to what sounds like the toughest phase, the storm of sankharas. We need to unpack that term.
That's annoying. Sankharas, karas.
Mm-hmm.
He describes them as the deep mental habits, psychological residue. It's like past conditioning, suppressed memories, old traumas, all the stuff buried deep down.
And during intense practice, this stuff surfaces.
Oh, yeah, big time. They can surface as overwhelming emotions or even intense physical pain that seems to have no cause. It's like a deep cleaning of the psyche.
So how did Coleman get through that? What was the breakthrough?
His ultimate breakthrough came right in the middle of this storm when he realized anicca experientially.
Anicca, that's the Pali word for.
Impermanence.
Mm.
The core truth that absolutely everything is transient Everything arises and passes away.
Well, he didn't just understand that intellectually, like, oh yeah, everything changed.
No, he felt it.
Yeah.
And the actual tingling, vibrating sensations in every atom of his body. He felt the pain arrive, intensify, and then dissolve. He felt the emotions surge and then pass.
And by ceasing to react, by just watching it all with equanimity,
he realized they were just transient energy patterns. They weren't him.
Mm-hmm.
And by not reacting, not adding fuel to the fire, the old conditioning, the sankharas, they just dissolved.
Yeah.
He stopped creating new suffering and allowed the old stuff to burn itself out. And the final goal, then, is integration. Taking this awareness off the cushion and into daily life.
Right, because insights on a retreat are one thing.
Exactly. The material really emphasizes that breakthrough insights, creative solutions, they often arise when the mind is actually quiet, not when you're straining and forcing. So this stillness, paradoxically, it enhances creativity, productivity. It gives you a calmer, wiser foundation for actually engaging more effectively with life. Hashtag TechTech4. Key themes and messages.
Okay, so let's boil this down. What are the core takeaways here? The big messages we can pull directly into our, you know, busy, often chaotic modern lives. I think I see four key ones.
All right, lay them out. Let's see what resonates.
Okay, first, experiential truth is king. All the philosophy, all the self-help books, all the intellectual understanding in the world. It's basically useless for alleviating that deep inner turmoil.
Hmm.
The crucial breakthrough is experiencing the truth of impermanence, Annika, directly. Through your body, through sensations. Transforming it from just a concept into a tangible, felt reality.
Yeah, that makes sense. Knowing intellectually that stress is bad for you offers zero release in the moment, right?
Right.
But actually feeling the tightness in your chest and then watching it shift and maybe dissolve as you breathe with awareness.
Yeah.
That teaches you lasting resilience.
Exactly. Okay, second theme. Equanimity is purification. He argues that our misery stems directly from this ingrained habit of craving and aversion, wanting things to be different than they are.
Right.
So equanimity, just observing sensations without judgment, without reaction, that's the most powerful tool for letting those deep mental habits, those sankharas, dissolve naturally. It's not cold indifference. It's this profound inner balance.
Got it. What's number three?
Third, discipline is the gateway to freedom. This sounds counterintuitive too, maybe, but the strict rules of the retreat, the silence, the structure, they weren't arbitrary punishment.
He called them a protection.
Yes. Yeah. They create the necessary controlled environment, like the perfect surgical conditions to observe the mind without adding more distractions. You submit to that external discipline to earn real internal freedom.
Makes sense when you put it like that. It contains the mad monkey.
Right. And finally, maybe the biggest realization of all, we are not our thoughts. The fundamental insight is that your core identity, your true self, isn't found in that relentless stream of thoughts and emotions passing through your mind.
But where is it found then?
It's found in the stable, underlying awareness that observes them. You are the sky, not the clouds that just drift through it. Hashtag TagTag5. Notable quotes ideas.
Coleman's very direct style, probably from his former career maybe, led to some really memorable ideas. Things that stick with you long after you encounter his work.
Yeah, give us three of the most powerful ones.
Okay, first, the technique is to observe reality as it is, not as you would like it to be.
Hmm. Simple, but profound.
It really is. It's the direct antidote to all that craving and aversion we talked about. It just closes the gap between what is and what I desperately want, which functionally is suffering.
It sounds so basic, yet observing reality without immediately judging it or wishing it were different. That might be the hardest thing we do as humans.
Absolutely. Okay, second powerful idea, especially from his more scientific writings. The quiet mind is not empty, but full of awareness, presence, and possibility.
Oh, I like that. It counters the idea that stillness is just blank.
Exactly. He challenges that misconception. It's not a dull, empty state. It's actually a state brimming with clarity, with creative potential, precisely because all the reactive noise has finally subsided.
Okay, and the third one.
This one feels intensely practical. Attention is the currency of consciousness. How we spend it determines the richness of our experience.
Oh, that's good.
It links your mental training, your ability to focus, directly to your quality of life. If your attention is scattered, pulled everywhere, reactive, well, your experience of life feels fragmented and stressful.
But if your attention is focused, intentional,
then your experience becomes richer, deeper, more meaningful. Where you put your attention is your life. Hashtag #6, real life applications.
So let's make this super concrete. How do we take these lessons learned maybe on a silent retreat or read about in neuroscience terms and apply them to, I don't know, Tuesday afternoon traffic or a high-pressure work deadline?
Okay, the most immediate utility is definitely in emotional regulation. Think of it as installing a pause button.
A pause button?
Yeah. When anger or frustration or anxiety flares up, instead of instantly reacting, lashing out, spiraling,
yeah,
you pause. You locate the physical sensation of that emotion.
Where is it in the body?
Exactly. Is it tightness in the throat, heat in the face, a knot in the stomach? You just observe that sensation as an impermanent changing physical event, not as I am angry, but there is heat arising.
And that observation creates a space.
A critical space. A pause button between the stimulus, the traffic jam, the difficult email, the annoying comment, and your habitual, often destructive response. Instead of instantly yelling or firing off an angry reply, you get a chance to respond consciously, wisely.
That alone sounds life-changing.
It can be. And this same pause button is transformative for breaking bad habits. Think about addiction or any compulsive behavior, constantly checking social media, stress eating, whatever it is.
Okay.
It's rooted in craving pleasant sensations or avoiding unpleasant ones.
Yeah.
By observing the craving itself as just a physical sensation, a tightness, an emptiness, a restlessness that will inevitably pass.
You don't have to act on it.
You're no longer compelled to act. You recognize it as just transient energy, not some command you must obey. You weaken its grip.
And what about relationships? That's where a lot of reactivity happens.
Huge implications there. Think about improved relationships. Just understanding that other people are also driven by these unconscious, often chaotic patterns, their own hidden sankharas, their own cravings and aversions.
It fosters compassion.
Exactly. It fosters genuine compassion. Rather than immediate judgment or defensiveness, you realize, they're caught too. This allows you to respond consciously to conflict, seeking understanding, instead of just reacting blindly and escalating things. It transforms the whole dynamic. #7, final takeaways. You know, reflecting on all this, what really stands out to me is that integration, the weaving together of the scientific perspective and the deeply personal experiential journey. Mm. The enduring insight isn't some complicated theory. It's the simple, profound realization that peace isn't some external commodity you acquire. It's not out there.
It's
a state of being.
Yeah.
Something you cultivate moment by moment through honest, courageous self-observation. And the scientific understanding, it just validates this. It shows that cultivating this inner quietude provides the actual foundation for being more effective, more compassionate, and, more creative in life.
Like practical mysticism.
Exactly. It proves that inner work isn't navel-gazing. It's maybe the ultimate productivity hack, if you want to frame it that way.
And for me, I think the sheer power of transformation is the most compelling part of the story. You take the CIA agent, master of external control, strategy, observation of others.
Right.
And he learns to completely surrender that control, to turn inward and simply observe his own internal world, chaos and all. That journey is just. It's absolute proof that radical inner change is possible for anyone, no matter their background or how analytical they are.
It really is inspiring.
The core lesson, I think, is moving from a life largely governed by blind, unconscious reaction to one characterized by conscious, awake, fully aware response. That shift changes everything.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world.
This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.